Today, the RBA lands sunny side up. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, today, Tuesday, the RBA left the cash rate unchanged, as expected. But it's quite interesting looking at their minutes and trying to parse out what they're really thinking. This is what they said. At its meeting today, the board decided to leave the cash rate unchanged at 0.75%. The outlook for the global economy remains reasonable. There have been signs that the slowdown in global growth that started in 2018 is coming to an end. Global growth is expected to be a little stronger this year and next than it was last year. And inflation remains low almost everywhere. One continuing source of uncertainty despite recent progress is the trade and technology dispute between the US and China, which has affected international trade flows and investment. Another source of uncertainty is the coronavirus, which is having a significant effect on the Chinese economy at present. It's too early to determine how long-lasting the impact will be. Interest rates are very low around the world, and a number of central banks eased monetary policy over the second half of last year. There is an expectation of little further monetary easing in some economies. Long-term government bond yields are around record lows in many countries, including Australia. Borrowing rates for both business and households are at historically low levels. The Australian dollar is around its lowest level over recent times. And then they went on to say, the central scenario is for the Australian economy to grow at around 2.75% this year and 3% next year, which would be a step up from the growth rates over the past 2 years. Now, that's interesting because they have not down forecast forward growth. Those percentages are the same as what they were, which I find quite surprising given the current context. Anyway, they go on to say, in the short term, the bushfires and the coronavirus outbreak will temporarily weigh on domestic growth. The household sector has been adjusting to a protracted period of slow wages growth and last year to a decline in housing prices, with the result that consumption has been quite weak. Following this period of balance sheet adjustment, consumption growth is expected to pick up gradually. The overall outlook is also being supported by the low level of interest rates, recent tax refunds, ongoing spending on infrastructure, a brighter outlook for the resources sector, and later this year, an expected recovery in residential construction. Sidebar, the latest data was pretty weak and was indeed flattered by a one-off rise in unit approvals in Victoria for high-rise. This is the problem, of course, with the data. It's very noisy, and if you get one large approval through, it can move the numbers quite a long way. They went on to say the unemployment rate declined in December to 5.1%. and is expected to remain around this level for some time before gradually declining to a little below 5% in 2021. What they've done there is to forecast a lower rate of unemployment than previously. Wages growth is subdued and is expected to remain at around its current rate for some time yet. A further gradual lift in wages growth would be a welcome development and is needed for inflation to be sustainably between the 2 to 3% target range. Taken together, recent outcomes suggest that the Australian economy can sustain lower rates of unemployment and underemployment. Inflation remains low and stable. Over 2019, CPI inflation was 1.8% and underlying inflation was a little lower than this. The central scenario is for CPI inflation to be around 2% in the near term and to fluctuate around that rate over the next couple of years. In underlying terms, inflation is expected to increase gradually to 2% over the next couple of years. There are continuing signs of a pickup in established housing markets. This is especially so in Sydney and Melbourne, but prices in some other markets have also increased. Mortgage loan commitments have also picked up, although demand for credit by investors remains subdued. Mortgage rates are at a record low, and there is strong competition for borrowers of high credit quality. Credit conditions for small and medium-sized businesses remain tight. The easing of monetary policy last year is supporting employment and income growth in Australia and a return of inflation to the medium-term target range. The lower cash rate has put downward pressure on the exchange rate, which is supporting activity across a range of industries. Lower interest rates have assisted with the process of household balance sheet adjustment. They've also boosted asset prices, which in time could lead to increased spending, including on residential construction. Progress is expected towards the inflation target and towards full employment, but that progress is expected to remain gradual. With interest rates having already been reduced to a very low level and recognising the long and variable lags in the transmission of monetary policy, the board decided to hold the cash rate steady at this meeting. Due to both global and domestic factors, it is reasonable to expect that an extended period of low interest rates will be required in Australia to reach full employment and achieve the inflation target. The board will continue to monitor developments carefully, including in the labour market. It remains prepared to ease monetary policy further if needed to support sustainable growth in the economy, full employment, and the achievement of the inflation target over time. Now, 2 points to make. Firstly, they have taken out the wording that mentioned a gentle recovery, which is what they'd spoken about previously in their last minutes. And secondly, it still seems to me extremely optimistic, given, of course, we don't know what's going to happen with regard to the coronavirus. But nevertheless, the RBA is still relatively bullish. But let me explain why I think they are over-optimistic. The first thing to say is that according to Bloomberg, a death from the coronavirus is reported in Hong Kong, in what would be the second fatality outside mainland China, where the number of cases has topped 20,000. And the US said it's preparing for a possible pandemic, though a heavy majority of cases remain in China's Hubei province. The spread of the new virus can remain minimal and slow if the outbreak is fought at the source and countries cooperate, the World Health Organization chief said. And at the moment, the number of China deaths is 425, with 414 in Hubei. And of the 20,438 cases in China, 13,522 are in Hubei. But of course, the fallout continues. Macau, for example, is closing their casinos. And Hyundai is to halt output because of part shortages. Hyundai Motors is halting production in South Korea this week because of a component shortage caused by the coronavirus, the first global automaker to suspend output outside China because of the outbreak. The carmaker has been hit by a shortage of a wiring component made by a Chinese supplier, whose operations have been halted after a worker was infected by the virus. And here's another one. Xi warns the virus may impact China's stability. Chinese President Xi Jinping called on all officials to quickly work together to contain the coronavirus at a rare meeting of top leaders, saying the outcome would directly impact social stability in the country. The effort to contain the virus directly affects people's health, China's economic and social stability, and the country's process of opening up, he told a meeting of the Communist Party's powerful Politburo Standing Committee on Monday. Leaders also urged officials to achieve the targets of economic and social development this year and promote stable consumer spending. And another very important issue relates to the iron ore price. China's benchmark commodity futures plunged for a second day amid a rush by traders to exit positions as the coronavirus impact raises questions about materials and energy demand. Iron ore tumbled by 5.9% after trading limit down on Monday. Crude oil, rubber and PTA also extended losses as the country's three major commodity exchanges opened for a second day of trading following the Lunar New Year holiday. So there are a couple of real examples. Firstly, because of the fact that China is now wired into so many supply chains around the world, and particularly are making parts for many different industries like the car industry. If those manufacturing processes are stalled, then it spreads very quickly. And secondly, if demand for commodities comes off and the price falls, that's going to have a very significant impact, for example, on Australia, who's very dependent on the high price. And you may remember that in the MIEFO, they did say that if the iron ore price dropped by $10, that translates to a bottom line hit for Australia of $3 billion. So a significant drop in the iron ore price would have a very significant impact on the local budget. Now, here's another part of the puzzle. This is from the South China Morning Post ahead of Monday's opening. China's central bank will pump 1.2 trillion yuan, or 174 billion US dollars, into financial markets on Monday as part of an effort by regulators to mitigate volatility when trading opens against the backdrop of a new coronavirus outbreak. The purpose of the injection is to, quote, ensure sufficient liquidity supply. The liquidity of the overall banking system will be 900 billion yuan more than the same period last year, the central bank added. It's the first time that the central bank has made such an announcement and also marks the largest single-day reverse repo operation it has ever conducted. According to Reuters calculations, 1.05 trillion yuan, or 151 billion US worth of reverse repos, are set to mature on Monday, meaning that 150 billion yuan in net cash will be injected. The injection is one of 30 measures announced by multiple authorities this weekend to steel the economy against disruption from the coronavirus outbreak. Economists have forecast China's economic growth may drop below 5% in the first 3 months of the year from 6% in the fourth quarter of 2019, and many have warned the downward trend may continue into the second quarter. China's securities watchdog said on Sunday that the virus outbreak would only have a short-term impact on stock markets, but it would be on alert for abnormalities. The China Securities Regulatory Commission said it was considering unveiling a hedging instrument to offset any panic in the market and would suspend evening futures trading starting from Monday. So there you see intervention in the markets in relatively classic style, including steps to put more liquidity into the marketplace. Which takes us to a recent CNBC article headed "Why Central Banks May Not Be Able to Save China's Economy from the Coronavirus." As China continues to reel from the spreading coronavirus, the world is looking for a familiar entity to swoop in and save the day, a central bank, in this case the People's Bank of China. This time, though, even big rate cuts and other forms of easing may not be enough. Central banks like the PBOC and its counterparties around the world, notably the US Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank, have been bailing out economies and financial markets since the 2008 financial crisis. Trillions in digital money printing, along with bargain-based interest rates, have been the main weapon of choice to combat recurring episodes of slowness. On cue, the PBOC on Monday announced a massive reverse repo program, swapping high-quality securities for cash, along with corresponding cuts in short-term rates. In the virus case, though, policymakers are facing a major unknown that comes at a time when China's economy already was slowing. This may be one instance, then, when opening the spigots on monetary policy isn't enough. We doubt that the steps announced Monday alone will be enough to put China's economy back on track, a market economist at Capital Economics said in a note to clients. The latest cuts will do nothing directly to offset the drag on economic activity from Chinese authorities' response to the epidemic, notably travel bans and business closures. And even the most optimistic scenario, whereby the epidemic would be put under control rapidly and things would go back to normal soon, we think that the PBOC would need to cut rates again this year, he added. And of course, that was a recurring theme as China's main stock index dropped nearly 8% on Monday. And the PBOC said it would lop 10 basis points off its 7-day and 14-day reverse repo rates and inject 1.2 trillion of its local currency, the renminbi, through reverse repos. The moves did little to calm the selling in China, though US stocks posted solid gains later in the day. Economist Mohamed El-Erin, however, warns US investors about buying into weakness considering the current circumstances. The playbook has worked extremely well, and it's one I've deployed, which is rely on central bank injections because the marketplace believes that liquidity can decouple us from fundamentals for a very long time. El-Erin, chief economist advisor for Allianz, said during interview on CNBC's Squawkbox, everyone seems conditioned to behave this way, but it assumes the shock is temporary, containable, and reversible. Those are phrases that are very hard to associate with coronavirus. Central banks could be reaching a point where they are ineffective, if not counterproductive, in combating current issues, he said. Amid the worries about longer-ranging impacts from the virus, Citigroup has cut its outlook for China GDP this year. But it also thinks that ultimately monetary policy and fiscal policy in the form of deficit spending from China will converge to limit the damage and, quote, arrest the downward spiral of economic activities. We expect the negative economic impact of the 2019 NCOV to concentrate in the near term before the virus is contained and the government starts to repair the economy. However, he also cautioned that the first quarter could see growth as low as 4.8%, and in light of the developments of the situation over the past few days, we see the risk tilted more towards the downside. So that's a very important point. Firstly, we do not know how long this is going to go on for. We're already seeing some of the broader impacts. And if, in fact, Allianz is correct, it could be that the classic central bank response will not be sufficient. So we are living in very uncertain times. Just to close out this piece, I thought I'd update some of the indices. So the ASX 100 actually recovered slightly, up 0.34% to close at 5,764. And the local financials index was also a little higher, up 0.37% to 6,190, having, of course, fallen yesterday. The local volatility index, though, is still extended at 15.39, although it actually dropped 3% today. The Aussie-US dollar was up 0.36% today to 67.15, so it's been down as low as 66-something earlier on. Whereas the euro Aussie dollar fell 0.37% to 1.6462. The gold Aussie dollar cross was down 0.42% to 2,343. And the Bitcoin cross was down 1.36% to 13,825. Now, the latest on the Dow Jones is up slightly to 28,398. So there is a slight recovery underway. The same is true of the financials index as well. And the US volatility index is at 1797, just down a little from yesterday. The 30-year Treasury was sitting at 2.026, up 1.47% from yesterday. And the 10-year was also a little up, at 1.553, up 2.16%, whereas the 3-month is down 0.13% to 1.577. But you can see there that the 10-year 3-month is still inverted. Over in the UK, the FTSE was up 0.55% when I made this recording at 7,326, having dropped a long way yesterday. And the pound US dollar was down 0.23% to 1.2963. The US dollar yuan was down 0.41% to 6.99. And the Shanghai Composite Index was up 1.34% when I made this recording to 2,783. So a slight recovery from the 8% drop yesterday. And gold is down 0.26% to 1578. While WTI oil futures was up 1.06%, but is now down to 50.64, so significantly lower than a week or so ago, because there's less demand for energy, simply because of the slowing activity in China. And just to close out, Bitcoin was down 0.76% to 9,307. But of course, the real question is, what is the Shanghai Index going to do? And that's going to be determined by the progress of the virus over the next few weeks. But in that context, if we come back to what the Reserve Bank said, it does seem to me that they've been very optimistic. I have a feeling that this may be running for a much longer period. And therefore, the negative side of the scenarios look to me to be much more likely than a positive upside. But I do come back to the fact that the Australian economy is being hit by lower commodity prices, by a fall in tourism, by the fact that some of those foreign students can't get back to Australia to start the new term. And of course, we still have all the local issues regarding the bushfires and the very compressed level of income growth, which the Reserve Bank admits is going to continue for some time, and the rising cost of living. And I do come back to my central point about the CPI. It's much higher for real people than the official numbers. So on one hand, you can see that the RBA is relatively sporty with regard to its position. But if you stand back and look at the issues more broadly, I think you'd probably agree with me that things are less sunny than the Reserve Bank may like to represent them as. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.